You are listening to the Young Black Travelers Podcast, Black voices conversing on experiential travel, dedicated to creating a global community of travelers. Be bold, be inspired, be spontaneous. We are YBT.
To the Young Black Travelers Podcast.
Yeah.
I am your host, Simone, and I have with me, y'all introduce yourselves.
Valone, you go first.
Well, you just introduced me. I'm here. It's been a minute. I'm glad to be back. This is one of my one of the topics that's dear to my heart, so I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, and I'm Asher. You've heard a few episodes. I'm the founder of Young Black Travelers, so I'm excited to talk about this topic, so let's get into it.
I'm sure you guys want to know what topic they're referring to, and today we're going to get it in with Travel Through Black Panther Wakanda Forever. We hope you guys seen it. If you didn't, I'm sure by the end of this conversation, you're going to want to, and you're going to be looking for all of these references that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So let's dive right in. All right. So before we begin, let's just take a moment of silence for Chadwick Boseman. We thought that the film did a wonderful job celebrating his legacy. And so we just want to recognize that as well. So let's take a moment of silence. All right, so we want to welcome you guys back in, and we're going to be jumping right into the conversation. So let's go. Asher, Valone, first reactions. What's your thoughts?
So you're asking thoughts on the movie Black Panther Wakanda Forever. Listen, I loved the movie. I think they did an amazing job with a lot of the references, and a lot of them we're going to be talking about today. I felt it was a more impactful movie in a way. Like, I don't know if I got a lot of these references in the first movie, and I just felt this one, I was just sitting at the edge of my seat like, wow, they really did that. And so it was an amazing movie. Kudos to Orion and all the producers.
No, definitely. And I think that's what made it the difference, right? Mm-hmm. Ryan was actually directing it this time.
Yeah.
Producing it. Go ahead. Valone, what about you?
For me this time, I thought it was fantastic. I mean, there was just so much anticipation and build up for this film. You know, the first one brought out so many people, and it brought so many people together at that across the country. You know, you can see how Black people came together of all ages to come see this movie, and it was just fantastic for us to get back to this place where everyone was excited. Now, Asher mentioned references, and I would love to hear more about the references that he's talking about. But I really didn't have too many expectations going into the film. I was just hoping that it would be able to deliver, another quality performance all around. And it certainly was a quality film.
Yeah.
Longer than I expected. But this is one of the sequels that is going to live on forever.
Yeah.
Many of times, there are films who lose the momentum by doing a sequel, and Wakanda Forever, Black Panther 2, they continue to raise the stakes, and I'm looking forward to Black Panther 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
Save here.
No, for real. I felt like it was homely. Like, I felt the love, I felt the energy in the space, and I felt it throughout the movie. And it just was like, it just was a full circle for me, like from the beginning to the end. I thought there was this nice closure, and one of my friends really said it. I think, well, like, this wasn't necessarily a superhero movie, right? It was so much bigger than that, and I felt that, and I really loved that.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't even notice it was as how long was the movie?
It was like almost 3 hours.
maybe I was just so drawn into the movie at every moment that I honestly
you were in a trance.
I was in a trance because I did not notice that it was that long.
Oh my goodness! Yes, it really was. So kind of going back to that too, specifically the place, right? What does Wakanda mean to you? Like, what does it represent? And I know as people of color, it could mean so many different things.
I think that Wakanda, it means us, you know, it means, you know, I'll take it back to the 90s. It's like FUBU, right? For us, by us, right? For
come us, on. Us.
And, like Simone said, right, it makes you feel at home, right? It makes us feel, you know, of all ages, like the kings and queens that we are, right? It lets us see, and it reminds us that we can be prosperous, and we are prosperous, and we are blessed. But let me not open up the Bible and
preach.
Come on.
Hallelujah.
Yes, I feel that.
No, I would definitely agree with Valone. I think for me, Wakanda and the country Wakanda honestly represents just a utopian black society. It represents the space that black people can advance to. It represents just how powerful we can be as black people. The truth is, when you look at this space that is this country in fictional Africa, that is developed, you know, has some of the most modern technology in the world, and a place that, you know, countries like the US is trying to come to get resources from, this mineral that is nowhere else but has some of the most advanced technology in the world. I think it just represents the power that we as black people hold. But it probably points us to the future as to where we can be as a people. And if we all unite, and I hope that, you know, this utopian, this fictional world could become a real world to black people globally.
I'm going to add, it's somewhat shameful as well, right? Because if, you know, you hear Ash and I talking about how this makes us feel as, you know, Caribbean Americans, individuals that identify themselves as African Americans or black. But we look at Wakanda and we're like, man, it just makes us feel so good. But it's interesting to know what those individuals who were born and raised in Africa, if this is how they already feel, right? As Americans, we're yearning for this feeling. But there could be several Africans living in the continent of Africa that see Black Panther, and they're reminded of their everyday life. So it's such a shame that us living in America now have to go see a movie and be in such a trance, while there's others, whether they're not just living in Africa, they could be living in, you know, St. Vincent, they could be living in Jamaica, and they're already living in such a way that they feel like Wakandans.
That's interesting, right? No, I think both of you touched on like good points of like, it could be futuristic, but it could also be present. And in different spaces and at different times as well. And I think the movie kind of highlighted as well, like, even though it was vibrant and peaceful at certain times in all black space or all people of color space, at other times it could also be conflict, right? So it's not necessarily just one thing, but all of those conflict and peace could exist at the same time together. So I thought that was also interesting as well. And we're going to get into a little bit more of that after our break. So come back as we dive into more of those topics and themes that we saw. Welcome back, y'all. Thank y'all for staying with us. We're going to go right into our conversation. Again, you are joining myself, Simone Vallone, and Asher as we are traveling through Black Panther Wakanda Forever in our dialogue today. And so the first question that I have for you guys is around that theme of having strong female representation in a movie. And we saw that their voice was also very prominent as well, right, in decision-making. So my question then for you guys is how does the physical space and the time in that movie influence the physical representation in the culture? So we saw Talakana, we saw Wakanda, but we saw both female representation. How was that shown in the movie? Tell us a little bit about that.
Let me see. I mean, I loved the representation of the strong female representation in that movie. It was just powerful. I mean, I think it's a role, particularly in black society, women, or in Black Western society in the Caribbean. I know in St. Vincent, women has had a very strong role often. But I think in this day and age, it is important to show that nonetheless globally, right? To see the queen go and sit before the body of leaders, a lot of them men, and just walk in, even the way she walked in, just so powerful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way they looked at her, it seemed like they were all shivering in their boots. But I think that is important, especially for females, to know that, like, they can own a space. They can own a space like that. The warriors, all of them leading a country. It's important for the world to know that females can lead. And I just loved it.
I think it was, you know, I think it was great for our, you know, our young women, our young girls, you know, to see, you know, more of that female lead, that more of that female strength. You know, while we had some of that in the first one, in the first Black Panther, you know, the second one really brought that out. And I think that, like Asher said, for the queen to be able to come out and represent, I think that was, you know, such a strong note in the film to have. You know, when we think about our history and we go back to Egyptian culture, right, there's been quite a few Egyptian queens who, you know, were established and had dominion over millions of men and people, right? Mm. You know, Queen Sheba, Nefertiti, right? Just, you know, so many queens in the past who had power. And, you know, if we look at today's, you know, global picture, there's a lot more women who are heads of state, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, unfortunately, they're all women who are white, but it just also shows that, you know, women are taking charge and they are capable.
Can I also mm-hmm. add that typically what you see in a lot of movies, and even when you look at the first Black Panther, there's typically a blending of male who may be the lead, and even though they may be a strong woman, she's also playing behind him. And you see that a lot in many movies, but mm-hmm. in this movie, like, it was all women. Like, women were the leaders, they were the warriors, right. It was just women. So I thought that was powerful because it wasn't a man who is king or a leader, right, with a queen behind who's still playing a powerful role. But here it was literally all women taking powerful positions and leading their country and dominating while they're doing it.
Right. And I think, though, for me, it was not new, right? It's new on film and on the screen, but it doesn't necessarily have to be in a head of state position. Women have always been hard workers. They always have been able to hold down their families as caretakers. Mm-hmm. Of, even though you see the man as maybe the heads, a lot of times the women are behind, are helping to influence those kind of big decisions. So I see it another way, in terms of it's being shown on film more, but this is who women have always been doing, just in different ways, that's now just being shown. But I really agree with you guys of seeing that. And I think for representation and for young girls coming up, how it's powerful, right, for them. So let's keep this going. Like, another theme that we were discussing that we saw in the movie was about colonialism and nationalism, right? And yes, very, very heavy topics, right, that we saw, especially with the leader of Talokan, and when he had the flashback to his childhood, and we were able to see a glimpse of slavery and that oppression that was happening in a lot of the Western Hemisphere in general. And that idea of, so we saw the lasting impact, right, on him and how he decides to rule his people. And we see the tension that, like, a colonial mindset could bring about. So my question then for y'all is, our role, when we think about our role, right, we see a lot of countries now coming together. We see them, the rise of nationalism and the rejection of colonizer, right? And people taking pride and preserving their culture. So what is our role, bringing it back to travel, as we go into other people's, other countries when we're travelers? What is our role as travelers with these tensions, like, of us being, as a sense, an outsider, and with, like, interacting and being with the local community? What is our role?
Our role. I think our role, honestly, is to be, to spread what our beliefs are, because what we recognize, we have to, if we believe in the diversification of ideas and spreading of ideologies, we have to be willing to do that, in a sense, but also be cognizant that certain people may not be aware or may have very nationalist ideologies, which we saw, you know, very much represented in Talokan. I think that's how you say it. Like, they were so closed off for quite some time. And I do believe a nationalist identity is necessary at certain points to build yourself up to a place where you can, like, then bring in other people to extend you further, which I think we also saw that in the movie, right? Like, they were at this point where we saw them extremely established, but if with outside influences, they would then be able to go so much further than they would if they were consistently closed off. And I think that's our role as travelers. Our role as travelers is to learn from others, because we are not just going to spread an ideology, but I think we are going around the world to also help other people understand a little bit about us, or to even ease some of the tensions that they may think about us or other things. Because a lot of times you recognize that there may be misconstrued notions about different people and different things. And when we step in as travelers, maybe it is our role to clarify and help people understand a little bit more about a thing they may be confused about, because we have a perspective that they may not have. So I honestly think that is our role in that. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. Valone?
I think Asher covered that really well. So I think my answer is going to be a little different. in terms of, you know, the film, right? And just, you know, seeing how, you know, BIPOC, you know, people that identify as Black, you know, indigenous, you know, person of color, you know, we build these great civilizations, and there's always this evil that comes in, and we have to now defend ourselves, and they threaten everything that we've built. And not only do they threaten everything we build, they then come in and try to change everything. So it was key for us to see that the Wakandans, one, faced oppression, or they faced the event of oppression, and then the Talakans also faced that as a people of color. And, you know, where do we come together to fight off that evil, right? Or we often see that the oppressor tries to pin both cultures of color against one another for their higher purpose, or for their ability to continue to conquer. So those are my thoughts on, you know, colonialism and nationalism and oppression and exploitation.
And Simone, can I add, like, I just feel, and we keep going back to the references in this movie, which is our premise for this conversation. I just feel that the producers, the writers, they just did an amazing job in highlighting and identifying these terminologies that honestly at times we, you know, I don't know if I feel a lot of history teachers and professors could use this movie to really break down and help people understand these terminologies. Because when we look at nationalism, the definition of nationalism, which directly connects to Talakan, I think we're saying that right, the definition is identification with one's own nation and support for its own interests, especially to the exclusion or deterrent of the interests of other nations. That's clear with what they were doing, right? They were trying to protect themselves. They blocked themselves off from the outside world to protect themselves. And they were very fearful that other people will come in and destroy what they have. And a lot of times, as I said before, countries that are nationalist in essence, they do that to build themselves up, right? But at a certain point, you could be so closed off that you won't necessarily understand what is happening in the outside world. Because I think what we've all learned, especially as travelers, is that when we mix and interact with other people and we understand our differences, we grow so much more than when we grow in our silos. And
right. That, but it has to be done with care, right?
And it has to be done with care.
Because some people don't go into communities and places with good intentions, right? Or with that same like care and thought process that when you do it right, it's good.
Correct. Right. Correct. People. So a lot of people don't. Obviously, when we're talking about like exploitation and just how the old God was, that's generally not how it was done. Hence why I think the fear, all of that come in. And obviously the notion of nationalism, that's why all of that is there, because people, because of the way it was all done. But I think, nonetheless, the way they portrayed all of these terminologies that we learn about in history and political science and all these places, it was done like well, extremely well in this movie. I was just blown away. I was blown away from all angles.
Yes, no, definitely. And I want to add too that I don't necessarily think there, or that we can cover in this time that we have together, that one is that nationalism in itself is a good or bad thing. I don't think it's a good or bad, but how it's, I think it's important to have the conversation of how it's used. And like, as you guys were talking about preservation and culture and identity, right? There's that good building of identity and values as a people, as in a country, all of that is good. But when is it too, when do you close yourself off from help or learning? I think that's another part, right? But it's, I love that we're having this conversation in terms of just to hear people's thoughts about what they think about it. Mm. Because I think Wakanda had a good, strong nationalism as well, right?
They did.
They had an identity. It was strong. It was vibrant. But they also was going to these meetings outside, right, where they were connecting and hearing what other people had to say so that they could also be in the know, because we also know that knowledge is also power as well. So that was important.
Mm.
But it goes into my next question for y'all guys. So how does opening your country, though, expose you to exploitation? Because we saw that in the movie, right? Like, they wanted to, Talaka wanted to stay hidden so they don't get exploited for the vibranium, right? They want, and same thing for Wakanda, they didn't want other people to find that because they know it was so powerful. So when you open yourself up, and we can think about it even for ourselves as travelers, some countries are more restrictive when they come to who they accept in their country, or your time limit you can spend as a traveler. Like, when can it, how does that opening expose you? What do you guys think?
It's, you know, it's difficult because sometimes when you are a leader, you know, of your people, you want to be able to open them up to experiences that will allow your country or your people or even your family to grow. But when you sometimes let these outside forces come in, they really just create a path of divorce and destruction. I think we have learned in our textbooks, and I don't want to speak for others, but I'm most certain that our ancestors, those who were kind-hearted people and didn't know any better, no fault of their own, that opened the doors to colonizers. If they could do it again, I am most certain that they would close that door and keep us shut and find a way to ensure that never happens. And we might not be here today having this conversation because there might not have been a need for a Black Panther movie to express some of this Black prosperity. Because if we had kept our gates closed, the prosperity would have been, you know, it would have been so wide and far. Perhaps there wouldn't be a Black Panther. Maybe it would have been called White Panther, right?
White Panther. Oh boy, no, you're right. We walk a thin line, especially with opening the doors of various countries, different places, because people, I think at a certain point, especially as you said, Simone, if you're not careful in how you move, exploitation will happen. I think, you know, years ago, especially during the colonial era, a lot of it happened then. And even now, it's a new age where it's happening in a different way, right? If we notice in Africa, yet still with, there's this whole thing about the Chinese giving loans. They are opening up their countries to these loans and to the Chinese. But they have the African nations, many of them are not going through the IMF anymore, but they're going through the Chinese banks, which is a new type of exploitation, because there's a lot of conversations today around the fact that many of these countries could possibly default on a lot of these loans, and therefore opening them up to the countries being exploited by China, their resources, the thing literally that make them who they are, because a lot of these countries are the richest in the world. And the thing that the Chinese, and I'm using the Chinese now because I think it's a new age of colonialism and exploitation, and it's a new age of I guess resource grabbing that we necessarily don't talk about a lot because people don't see it in the way it happened as old, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we have to be extremely careful because a lot of these things are taking root in many countries, even outside of Africa. It's happening in the Caribbean where, I'm sorry to bring up China, but the Chinese are the ones who have the money these days, right? And they are building infrastructure in many countries around the world. And mm-hmm. the question then becomes, can these countries who are taking these loans, which I do believe many of them should, because we have to build up infrastructure. But I think part of the conversation goes towards the fact of what are you guys signing to, or how are you negotiating your deal? You have to be careful that you, at the end of it, you are not exploited if you're not managing how you're negotiating with some of these countries like China. So I think exploitation happens, and there's a mm-hmm. new age of it that I think for many of us, we're still going to see the effects probably in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, how it all play out.
So much to unpack.
I think that it's very dangerous, in my opinion, this business that we're doing with China. I think this is a new level of conquest that the Chinese are conducting with a lot of our brother and sister nations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a fan of it all. Our countries, especially Jamaica, you know, where my family's from, is too reliant on the Chinese government. The Chinese is coming in, and the prime ministers of these countries are bowing to these Chinese men. And yes, the Chinese are bringing in planes and building airports and fixing roads quicker than the timeline of these countries. But once again, this is the same thing that happened in the 1800s and the 1700s and the 1600s. But now we're dealing with nuclear weapons and armies that are stronger than the muskets that were used 1600, you know, in 1600 and 1700. So I'm not a fan at all of this business. And we also know, you know, well, for the political scientists, we know that China's also using this as a way to exert military force, right? These countries that are not going to be able to pay off their loans or whatnot are then going to be forced to house Chinese military officers and Chinese military weapons. And then the country that we live in, America, while we know our country is not perfect, we will then be on the defensive and be fearing for our lives. Now, we might not be around for it, but our children and our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren will be the ones that will have to deal with the potential of, you know, a Chinese invasion of the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Simone, like this I think is the modern form of exploitation as we're explaining here. It's and right now we may not necessarily see the immediate impacts of it all, because I think a lot of these loans and these agreements are newer, right? Like within the last 10, 20 years or even newer than that. But I think, and as Volode is saying, come 20, 30, 50 years from now, when, and God forbid, and I hope it never happens, come when Kenya can't pay off what it borrowed to China, and then and China now owns the Standard Gauge Railway, which was built by China. That's a whole other problem, right? Or the Chinese now own the highway that was recently built in Jamaica, which we know these countries need. But the thing is, like, how, I think my biggest question and fear is, how are politicians negotiating these contracts so the people at the end will not be exploited?
Ooh, okay. All right. this was heavy. This was deep, but also important conversation, right? And we can go on in different ways of how that can look, right? Mm-hmm. That exploitation can happen, of how we as travelers, I'm going to go back to like as a traveler, of making sure that we ourselves are not going to other countries, and then we might see certain ideas about how they dress or the way that they talk or music, and that we bring it back to our communities and country and then make it seem like it was our idea. I think on a local level, that also happens a lot, where the credit is not given where credit is due. And I think that's also important for to be able to give for that responsibility to say, no, this is where I got this from, or this is where I saw that. Mm-hmm. As well. But no, thank y'all for no, definitely bringing it back today, and for people to like kind of go and look at that for themselves, research more about that. So we are coming down to the end, but we wanted to leave off with this joy that we experienced throughout the movie, where we saw Haiti being represented, and we were so excited.
Yeah.
Yes, that Haiti was shown as a sanctuary, and we know Haiti was the first Black Republic in the Western Hemisphere and governed by men of African descent. And to know that it was a sanctuary back then at that time and continues to be in terms of in Wakanda, Wakanda forever, that just brought so much joy for me personally to be able to kind of see that connection. And I wanted to know, guys, what were your thoughts on experiencing that in the movie?
Listen, I was smiling cheek to cheek. I was like, wow, they really did this. And I don't think by now, I mean, you guys should have seen the movie. So we'll drop some spoilers here. but the truth is, like, even at the end, make sure you stay until after the credits when we see, because this was like one of the realest moments, the naming of the new, he possibly could be the new Black Panther. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's my assumption. That's what they're going to do in the future. Toussaint. They name him Toussaint in Haiti, the first liberator, or the liberator of Haiti. Like, that was just so powerful. And right. To also just see that the fact that that's the Black Panther, the heir to the throne, was raised and reared in Haiti. That's like, these are just some powerful themes, because especially when we know that Haiti in modern media or modern day world is looked upon as, it is one of the poorest countries in the Western Hemisphere, but also one of the countries where Trump called a shithole country. And so just to see that the image that they shown in this movie of Haiti, I think was just glorious.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we know the history of Haiti, and Haiti has been through so much the last few years with the devastation of Mother Nature. So, you know, our prayers are out there for, you know, our Haitians. And I think that it still remains to be a sanctuary, but Mother Nature has come through and has devastated the country in such a way that I think people now think twice before going there. And it's no fault of the Haitians at all. It's not their fault. There's nothing they can do about it. But I'm grateful for their history and their traditions that have served our people before, and I'm certain we'll continue to serve our people in the future. So also appreciate Ryan and the Disney crew for also making that reference, right?
Right.
To remind those in the audience you know, about their history, about their ability to lead a successful revolution. Mm-hmm. You know, we often hear about Black revolutions that failed, right? But this movie reminded us about successful revolutions, and Haiti was, you know, a large part of that.
Absolutely, absolutely, yes, that was, and it really just the movie, I think, wrapped up very nicely, as you said, Asher, with that moment, and you know, like the pride of the people was really felt in that auditorium in the movie theater. so it was joy, right? Even it with was. The, as you said, Valone, a lot of devastations by Mother Nature, but also just recognizing that a place and a people are still strong and are still working together to overcome those difficulty. And wow, okay, we are going on a break. Do not leave, but we are coming back to close out our discussion.
Yep, yep, yep.
Okay. Welcome back, y'all. Yep. We just had such a fruitful discussion about Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
Wakanda Forever.
I hope you learned something. I hope you start watching it again if you decide to, with through a new lens, and that you share it with some of your other friends to enjoy this podcast and to watch the movie also. And so we're just gonna go into our closing, but first, you know, we always have to do our shout out to Asher.
Yeah, and like we always do on these episodes, we take a moment to just shout someone out, someone who has been following us, and they've been engaged with us on social media, usually on our Instagram. And today we're taking the time out to shout out, I am Jai Paham. I think that's how you say it, but I'll spell it for you. It's IAMJAIPARHAM. And I think he's Puerto Rican. Just have some amazing pictures there of some of the places he's traveled. So just go to his page, check him out, follow. Listen, this is a community of travelers and people who engage with each other. Maybe you see a picture there of some place that he went that you may need some information about. So just make sure you hit him up. I think I see from Alaska to Netherlands. I've never been to either one, and we just did a podcast on Alaska, right?
Yes,
and the Netherlands. So maybe you need to know information about either place. Go out and check him out.
Nice. Thank you, Asher. So we're going to close. This is our new special game that we like to play at our end of our podcast. We've been trying it out a few times. So we're going to do this or that. And the first one, you guys have to pick one, okay? That's the rules. No, both, no, just one. All right, so Black Panther 1 or the sequel, what is it? Which one you're absolutely your favorite?
Valode. Which one?
Easy choice for me. Black Panther, the first one, the original. Man, it just brought the culture together, like in no way before. Like it was just a vibe. It was just like, yeah. It's still unexplainable how we all just flocked to see that movie, how we flocked to support. Like, just think about the movie soundtrack. Just think about how you felt at the end, like you won everything. Like, it was just an amazing feeling.
Nice.
Wow. Well, I won't say number one. I honestly think number two was so much better than one. I mean, I don't know if it's because, like, I love these references and all these things. I just felt number two was had so much more meaning than number one. Of course, number one, you know, was the one of the first movie where we felt pride as a people. Mm-hmm. And I felt that's what number one did. But I think number two, man, they just rolled out all the stops for this movie. I mean, mm-hmm. in every regard, number two, I think, was way better than number one. Simone?
I'm going to agree. I really like number two. There was like the strong connections that I saw in the movie. I love the closure. I love the community feeling. I think I got that even more through the second one. There was a lot of emotions. Mm. I think that's for me too. The emotional impact was felt. So I'm gonna go with two.
And can I also add, I think number two was, I don't know, I felt number two had, I don't know if it had a larger budget, I don't know, but I just felt it was so much better produced. Mm. It was just, again, as I said earlier up in the podcast, you guys said the movie was 3 hours, but I didn't even recognize that this was 3 hours. I was just drawn in.
It was drawn in. And I think it goes credits to, right, the director, producer, Ryan, right? Like, you saw his style of writing and directing in the movie. Like, if you think of Fruitvale Station, I don't know if you guys saw that, and it was about the emotion impact that was also felt in that movie too, about a black man in California who was killed by a police officer. And I felt that same kind of like you're emotionally drawn into the movie with this movie as well.
Mm.
All right, so two, got it. All right, next one. So what is it gonna be? I think this is really hard, but you gotta choose one. So what we doing? Wakanda or Talokan? Where you guys wanna be? You wanna be underwater, or y'all trying to be like in the mountains, the hills and stuff?
Simone, which one are you choosing?
I don't like, I'm not a water person, so I think I'm gonna stay on land. I like the lushness of the trees and the beach. Like, that whole vibe, and I love the science technology that was had. You were living in like spheres and circles up in the mountain and stuff. I think that's where I'm gonna be, in Wakanda.
Same here. Wakanda for me. Wakanda forever.
Wakanda forever. Yeah.
So I don't know how to swim, so I think I might.
You and Simone need to go take some swimming classes. That's what you need to do.
I know, right? Okay, actually, that is on my to-do list. So I'm almost there. Then I can go to Talokan and be happy and whatnot. All right, here we go. The last one. All right, so there was two new characters in the movie, and so want to know who was your favorite. So we had Riri Williams or Aneka from Wakanda. So who are you going with? Who did you get the spice from?
Riri all the way. Riri all the way. I mean, I tell you, I just loved her performance. Just, she was just good. And I guess hopefully in Black Panther 3, like, Riri and her mother moves to Wakanda. Like, the spice she brought to the movie was just good. It was good. And she's a good pairing with Shuri. So yes, I just love them together. Yeah.
I'm gonna go with her as well. I love her brilliance, right? Mm. And that she was in college and they brought it back over to the US. A young black woman on campus just doing her thing, minding her business about her work and everything. I love that. And I thought she did a great job.
And her as Iron Woman.
I know. I was like, wait.
That was so cool. That was really cool.
It was. It was. So you're going to break the tie or you're going to grieve alone? Not break the tie. I mean, are you going to join us or are you going to go on your own?
Don't put the pressure on Simone.
Aneka was tough. You know, she was a tough character, and she was, you know, a part of the Warriors. So, you know, it was great to see her. But I'm going to go with Riri Williams. Just to correct Asher, she wasn't Iron Woman. She's Iron Heart.
Iron Heart.
And Asher, because he's such a fan of Iron Heart, he would be pleased to know that Disney is working on a Disney Plus series about Riri Williams and Iron Heart. So you have an opportunity to dive deeper into her story.
Come through.
Nice.
Wow. I don't want to see it on Disney Plus. I want to see it in the theaters because I'm purchasing on Disney Plus. But okay. Just for her.
Just for her. No, I get you. And low-key, I'm over here. Like, I see Disney doing their thing. Like, I'm really looking forward to seeing The Little Mermaid.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So I see Disney. Okay.
Yeah, we see you. We see each other.
We see each other. Exactly. Let's keep the intentionality going. Go ahead, Mama.
Something else that I'd love to point out that Simone referenced as well was it was good to see a black woman on the campus of MIT, which, you know, houses so many brilliant students. And it shows representation, not as just an African American, but, you know, as a female. Right, being on that campus. And what I enjoyed as well was she was a boss, right? She had those guys paying her to do their work. So it showed her level of intelligence and also showed her hustle, right? You know, black people, you know, I think a good amount of us have it in us to work hard and just hustle. So those are my words on that.
Good.
Yes. No, well said. Thank you, Valone. Thank you, Asher, for being with me in this conversation about Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
Forever.
I hope you guys go see it if you haven't. And we hope that you got something from what we said today. So we just want to remind everyone, all our listeners, to support our podcast by becoming a monthly contributor to continue to hear stories like this, to hear our voices, okay? So simply go to anchor.fm/youngblacktravelers and make sure you subscribe. And we just want to remind you, for all our travelers out there, continue to be safe, be mindful, learn about the country you're going to first, and be intentional and take care in the communities that you're visiting. And thank y'all. Thank y'all for listening. Yes. All right, everyone. See you.
Thank you. Join us next time.
Adios.
Adios.
See you later. Peace out.